And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Man Who Rode Like Revere, was written by William Wise.
Of all the heroes of the American Revolution, few have been honored more than Paul Revere, and few have been honored less than Francis Salvador. Yet their deeds were remarkably similar. Each was a leader in the patriotic cause. Each rode through the dark of night to warn against a surprise attack by the enemy. We know who Paul Revere was, but who was this other man, the one called Francis Salvador? To begin with, what was he like in his youth? And before that, what had he been like as a child?
Francis?
Yes, sir.
You know that when your father died, as head of our family here in England, I became your guardian.
Yes, Uncle Joseph.
So that I am responsible for your behavior. Now then, I want the truth. You went out riding this morning, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And you jumped several fences after I told you not to.
Yes, sir.
And then you came to a stone wall and boastfully said you could jump that too.
I thought I could, sir.
So you galloped across the field and you did jump it. A stone fence 3 feet high. Now, is that what happened?
Not exactly, sir.
Careful, Francis. I want the truth.
Well, sir, I jumped the fence, but it wasn't 3 feet high. It was at least 5 feet high. And my heart was beating like a drum till I got over it.
Restless, impatient. It was sometimes said that young Francis Salvador was both of these.
Come in. Ah, Mr. Peterson. What brings our chief bookkeeper all the way over to my office?
It's about your nephew, Mr. Salvador.
Oh, about Francis?
Yes, sir.
Yes, has there been any trouble?
To be perfectly frank, sir, I don't think he's the right sort of man for a banking house.
Is it his work?
No, sir, it's his questions.
Questions?
Yes, he's always saying to me, why don't you do it like this, Mr. Peterson, instead of like that? Or why do you list foreign loans with domestic, Mr. Peterson? Doesn't that complicate things? Or else he's asking me...
Of course, I see how you feel. Young men always want to improve things, don't they? Yeah.
They want to turn everything upside down.
Yes.
They want to change the whole world around.
Yes, and we can't let them do that. No, I'll have to talk with Francis. And I promise you, Mr. Peterson, he won't come bothering you like that again.
Thank you, sir. He's a likable lad, except for those infernal questions of his.
You said you wanted to ask me something, Francis?
Yes, but I couldn't inside, Sarah, with everyone dancing. Are you sure it isn't too cold for you out here on the balcony?
No, it's perfect. Such a warm, lovely night. What did you want to ask me?
Well, you know we're cousins, first cousins?
Of course I know that.
And you know how fond I am of your father, Uncle Joseph?
Of course. Is that what you wanted to ask me?
Well, no. No, what I really wanted to ask you was, did you really think I liked you just because we were cousins? Did you think that was the only reason?
Well, I'm not sure I ever thought about it, but if I had...
Yes?
I don't know what I would have thought. Well, if that's all you wanted to ask me, Francis, we might as well go back inside.
Oh, no. No, that wasn't all. Sarah, I love you. More than the whole earth, more than I thought I could love anyone. It's always been like this, ever since I can remember. Will you marry me, knowing me the way you do?
Oh, Francis, yes. With all my heart. Only...
Only what? Tell me, whatever it is.
Well, it's only that I wondered, Francis, why in the world did you take so long to ask me?
Several years of married life passed, and they were happy years for Francis Salvador and Sarah. They had four children, and they had each other. Then one night, the living room door swung open.
My father!
Oh. Uncle Joseph, it's such an hour. Here, yes. Let me take your coat.
Thank you. Sit down. You look so... Father, is anything wrong?
Is it the bank?
Yes. Yes, the worst has happened. The East India Company has failed. We were heavily invested, as you know. I've been working all night trying to figure out what we should do.
Is there nothing left?
Oh, a little. Mostly in some land we own in South Carolina.
In the colonies?
Yes, I have title to 100,000 acres there, but someone must look after them. See if they can be sold or managed better for sale later. If we're lucky, our man wouldn't have to stay on very long. Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody there already whom we can trust.
No one. One of us must go ourselves. To tell the truth, it requires a younger man.
Well, then, I'll go, Uncle Joseph. If things are that bad, I'll go quite willingly.
Oh, I knew you'd say that. I have no one else to ask.
But, Francis...
It's only for a few months, Sarah. Please, try to smile.
There's a packet leaving next week for Charleston.
Good, I'll plan to book passage then. It won't take me long to get ready.
But Francis Salvador stayed more than just a few months. One night he was entertaining two of his neighbors, his friend Tom Morgan and a planter named Jack Henderson.
Well, Jack, I can only say I'm sorry to hear you're leaving us.
And I can only say, Francis, I'm glad to be going. I can hardly wait to get back to England.
Oh, Jack, you'd better be careful what you say. Francis here is sold on life in the colonies. He's a regular fanatic.
Well, I can't understand why. Weren't you only supposed to stay a couple of months, Francis, and then go back?
Yes, yes,
and
that's
why
right.
Why didn't you? I'd like to know what could make a man want to stay in a place like this.
Jack, I want to stay because there's something stirring here. It's an ideal, a dream. It's something that has never happened before anywhere in the world.
What? A rebellion? The world's seen lots of them.
Oh, no, it's more than just that. It's a promise of freedom, not for one class, the way they mean freedom in England. Or for one race, or for one faith. But for all men equally. Listen, Jack. I've been talking with men like Drayton, Pinckney, Hammond, Rutledge. Oh, they're willing to fight if they have to, but for more than just their economic rights, more than merely to throw off the burden of unjust taxation. If it comes to a fight, and by God's will we hope to avoid it, then we will be fighting for a kind of freedom such as this earth has never seen before.
Is that all Francis says in his letter?
No, Father, there's more. He says now he wants to stay, not just because of the property, but for other reasons. And he wants me to come if there's no more trouble.
Oh, but there will be, Sarah. I heard today the Prime Minister won't back down. Neither side will. It gets worse and worse.
Then I won't be able to go, not for a while yet.
Did Francis say anything else?
Yes, he's been elected to something called... the First Provincial Congress of South Carolina.
Oh, Provincial Congress? It sounds like they mean to take matters in their own hands.
Oh, I hope he doesn't do anything rash. Do you think he'll be sensible and keep out of things?
Oh, of course, of course. He hasn't been there long enough to be important. Oh, they won't let him say very much.
Mr. Chairman, fellow delegates. Each time I have previously entered this debate, I have heard uneasy murmurs from a few of you. Who is this fellow Salvador? How can we trust someone so lately a citizen of England? Someone who is, in addition, a member of the Hebrew nation. Gentlemen, let me put your doubts to rest. You may trust me for many reasons, but the most important is simply this. You may trust me because I am a member of that homeless nation, which has been forced to travel over so much of the earth for so many generations. Here, at almost the first moment that my foot touched the soil of this colony, I realized there was a land of great natural wealth, to which had been given a still more priceless gift, the gift of freedom. And my nation, gentlemen, if such it can be called, has more reason to value this gift than perhaps any other people on the face of the earth. Therefore, I say to you, consider who I am, what I represent, and you will know that I must be wedded to our mutual cause as proudly and as firmly as the boldest among you. Some of you come from nations that have dreamed of liberty for 100 or 200 years. My people, gentlemen, have been waiting for more than 2,000.
A year passed, then another. Pitched battles were reported in the north at Lexington, Concord. Now in South Carolina, the clouds of war were gathering, too.
Francis! Oh, here you are.
Oh, hello, Tom. I didn't hear you come in. I was writing a letter back to England.
Oh, but there's no time for letters now. Haven't you heard the news?
No, what is it?
The British fleet's only 50 miles from Charleston, and there's been a call from the militia. I've just seen Major Williamson and put my name down.
Oh? So you're with us now?
Did you ever have any doubts? Of course I'm with you.
But I thought we were all hopeless fanatics.
Oh, that was a long time ago, Francis. Forget all that. When I saw the Major, he said that you joined his staff.
Yes, I did it last week.
But you didn't have to, Francis. You could have stayed in Charleston to help run things there.
No, we're all needed here, I'm afraid.
You mean the Cherokees?
Yes. Major Williamson is sure the Indians plan to attack our farms at the same time the fleet attacks the harbor.
Yes, and they'll be fighting, just like up north.
Yes, fighting. For a long, long time, I think.
Well, you want to finish the letter you were writing.
Yes, there's a ship leaving tonight. It might slip through. I want to try, anyway.
It's a very short letter, but all letters are short these days.
Yes, Father, it's very short.
Well, what does he say?
He says by the time I read this, England and the colonies will be at war.
Yes, we know all that ourselves.
And he says he's joined the local militia.
I thought he would. Francis didn't have to tell me that. Does he say anything else?
He asks me to look after the children and to try and be patient.
Of course, be patient. That's what men always say to women when they go to war.
And he says he loves me. That's all. Oh, Father, do you think you'll be safe?
Oh, yes, I'm sure of it. Why, in that part of the country, there may not be any fighting at all.
But 3,000 miles away, the British fleet had attacked the harbor. Two nights later, in the hills...
Help me! Mr. Salvador, help me!
I'm coming. Who is it? What's the matter? Who's out there?
It's me. Harry Smith.
Oh, Harry, my boy, you're wounded. Here, lean on my arm. That's it, lad.
Thank you.
We'll have you fixed up in no time.
Tom, come here and give me a hand.
Yes, Frank.
What happened to him?
The Cherokees. They attacked our farm. We had no warning.
Yeah, now, Harry, don't get excited. Lie down here. We'll fix up your wound.
50 Cherokees at least, Mr. Salvador.
Oh, Cherokees, you're sure?
Of course I am. We fought them off as long as we could. I was in the back of the house. I looked around. They stormed in the front, killed my dad, my brothers. I got out the window and ran all the way here.
All right, Harry. Mr. Morgan's going to take care of you. You're safe here with him.
But where are you going, Francis?
To Major Williamson.
But you can't. His place is 30 miles away.
I know. I have a horse.
But the Cherokees, they might be anywhere along the road.
Tom, I haven't got any time to argue. Look after the boy. If I don't get to Williamson, every planter in his family's in danger. There, get me my pistols, will you?
While I pull on my boots. Francis, you can't go. It's foolhardy.
Now... Where are the pistols?
All right, here.
Thank you. Goodbye, Tom. See you in the morning. God willing.
In the morning, Francis. God willing. I should have gone myself. But we don't all have that kind of courage.
The moon. I didn't need the moon tonight. It shows up everything. I haven't ridden like this since I was a boy. Not since England... It's morning in England now. Sarah will be up looking after the children. Ah, how big they must have grown. I wouldn't even know them. The youngest wouldn't even remember who I was. Dear God, what's that? just an owl. Hunting over the field. Not a band of wild Indians. Oh, Francis, your nerves aren't very strong tonight. Not far to go. Just another mile or two. Oh! Hit! But this... there's no blood. Oh, it was that tree back there. The branch hit my arm. What a coward I am. Like an old woman tonight. There, around the bend. I can see the major's house. Just a moment longer now.
Major Williamson! Get up! Williamson!
Who's down there? Is that you, Francis?
Yes, I just rode over.
What's the matter?
The Cherokees, they've attacked Smith's place. Killed all but one of the boys.
How long ago?
A couple of hours. I think they mean to attack at full strength in the morning.
Good. We still have time. We'll be ready for them.
Placed, Major?
All placed and ready, Francis. I've got every man 50 miles around up in the line.
There's so much mist. It's hard to see.
We'll hear them once it starts.
I wonder if...
Shh. There's something over there in the underbrush. Be quiet now.
Here they come. Hold your fire. All right. Fire left. Fire right. Fire on him.
Giving ground, Major.
We've beaten them. Keep firing, men.
Aye, we've turned them back.
Look at them run. Look at them run.
Well, Francis, our first battle's over. I want to thank you for myself and for the rest of us.
Well, Major, I'd rather you didn't. I...
Oh, and when a brave deed's been done, it has to be recognized. Your ride last night gave us the time we needed. If you hadn't risked your own safety, half the people in this part of the country would have been killed in their beds. We have no way to repay you, but every one of us owes you a debt of gratitude. And for that matter, so does the state of South Carolina.
Thank you, Major.
Come on, let's go back to my house and I'll tell you what I plan next. You know, Francis, for a member of the legislature, you handle a pistol very well. So you see, Francis, we've won only the first engagement. The Indians are hurt, but not defeated. We must gather as many men as we can. Try and get more rifles. You must go to Charleston for that. Then when we're strong enough, surprise them and cut up their forces.
But, Major, they've gone back to their own territory, haven't they?
Exactly. In another week or two, we'll attack them there before they get a chance to attack us again.
I see.
Now, look here at the map. This is my plan. March from here at night, as far as the river.
At night?
Of course, surprise. Then we cross the river and attack their village at daybreak.
I understand.
At night, while we're on the march, you'll ride with me and the rest of my staff at the center of the column. Scouts out in front and security scouts out behind.
Major?
No need to whisper. We have miles to go yet.
That village up ahead?
It's our own. We're still miles from Indian country.
I've heard the place is full of Tory sympathizers.
Maybe so. What difference does it make?
Behind that fence there.
What?
I'm sure I saw a shadow moving.
No, I don't think so. Your imagination. I'm afraid you're not used to soldiering yet, Francis.
Could have sworn I saw a shadow. Like a man.
Well, we'll be there in a minute or two, and then we'll have a look at your shadow. The scouts have gone by already, and they didn't see anything. Oh, for another few miles yet, we're as safe as if we were home in our own beds. It's a funny thing about the dark. I remember once when I was much younger...
Return the fire! Keep facing them! Don't give ground! Return the firemen!
Out!
Hurt! You're hit!
In the shoulder! I'm all right!
What is it? Where's Salvador? I saw him wounded.
Corporal, try and find him. Well, Corporal, we've driven them back where they came from. How many Indians killed?
17, sir.
And how many of our men?
None, sir. 2 men wounded.
Who's that they're carrying there?
It's Mr. Salvador.
Carry him carefully there. Set him down on the level ground. Here, put my jacket under his head. What happened to him, Corporal? I saw him wounded, then my own horse was shot from under me.
Mr. Salvador was wounded 3 times, sir. One of the soldiers saw him lying under a bush. Someone was bending over him. The soldier thought Mr. Salvador was being attended to.
The soldier could have killed the Indian and didn't?
Yes, sir. The one who was scalping Mr. Salvador.
What does the doctor say?
He can only live a few minutes longer, sir. He's fully conscious, but he doesn't realize what's happened.
Thank God for that. How do you feel now, Francis?
All right, Major. How did the engagement come out?
We've driven them off. But how are you really feeling?
There's no pain. I was hit 3 times. Then I believe I fainted.
Yes, you did.
That's never happened to me before.
Well, we'll have you up and around again in no time.
No, Major. I'm dying. But there's no pain. No pain at all.
Is there anything I can do for you?
You might write to my wife. Tom Morgan knows where she is. Tell her I thought of her at the end. And say that as I lay here in the dark, my thoughts were still of her. Of her.
And then, Mrs. Salvador, your husband said, I feel no sorrow except the sorrow of losing my wife, the only woman I ever loved. Of losing her so many years before I thought we should part. And then your husband closed his eyes and a moment afterwards died very peacefully.
Sarah, are you all right?
Yes.
You aren't even crying.
I have nothing to weep for, except for my children or myself.
Not for Francis. He was so young. He meant to do so much.
But he died believing in the dream he looked for all his life. Isn't that one of the greatest blessings God can bestow on us?
So ends the story of Francis Salvador, patriot. A man only 3 years in the New World, and only 29 years old when they buried him in an unmarked grave by a lonely country road. Francis Salvador, the man who rode like Revere.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Louis H. Weinstein, Chairman of the Boston Armed Forces Advisory Committee and President of the Combined Jewish Appeal of Greater Boston. Speaking from Boston, Mr. Weinstein.
Francis Salvador gave his life for his newly adopted country. Deeply embedded within him was a heritage of devotion to freedom. And his heroic ride was a spark, which added to others throughout the colonies, set ablaze the flaming torch of liberty, and made this nation free. There are many unsung and unknown heroes who respond nobly in moments of crisis. I saw many an example on the battlefields of Europe and in military hospitals during World War II. But fully as courageous as those in uniform were the ordinary, everyday people who did whatever had to be done, no matter how difficult or dangerous the task. The firefighter in London during the terrifying Blitz, the factory worker whom bombs could not discourage or dismay, the housewife who led her little ones into the safety of an air raid shelter. All these were men and women of true valor. Only a few weeks ago in Israel, I was privileged to see other examples of courage. Near the Gaza Strip, I talked to a young farmer in a frontier colony as he laid irrigation pipe to change the desert into productive soil. On his shoulder, he carried a rifle to protect his land and his crops and his children. In Jerusalem, I watched a schoolteacher calm her pupils when carbine fire interrupted the quiet of her classroom. And on the Sea of Galilee, I observed fishermen who cast their nets under the guns and sharp eyes of enemy neighbors. It is fundamental to Jewish ideals, as it is to American democracy, that each individual has within him basic value and integrity, that all men and women possess the capacity and the greatness to act when a critical hour demands action. Like Francis Salvador, they are ready to fight and, if need be, die for their country and for freedom. Their deeds may remain unknown. Their heroism may never be enshrined in song or story. But within every man and woman is the divine spark of greatness to rise to the need of the moment. A spark which is nourished by and nourishes the eternal light.
Thank you, Mr. Weinstein. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Man Who Rode Like Revere, was written by William Wise. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were William Redfield, Terry Keane, Mercer McLeod, Peter Laser, Ivor Francis, Robert Hastings, Peter Fernandez, Roger DeCoven, and James Dukas. The narrator was Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. This weekly program is directed by Daniel Sutter and presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.